I don't know why. Good morning. It is Friday, June 21st. Warm, sunny day in Tulsa, where I live. And we're doing another episode of Drive Through HR. And Robin Schooling is here with me once again. Robin, welcome back. How are you doing today?
Good, good. I'm glad we've got the gang together here pretty regularly. The
Yeah,
gang of two.
we've been on a roll recently and keeping this regular set of episodes coming out, unlike our usual habit of going months without a show and then doing six in a row. So we were just chatting for a second about the fact that neither one of us will be at SHRM, the big show next week. And I guess I did want to, since I'm not going to be there, I did want to say happy birthday to our mutual friend Jennifer McClure. I don't know if she listens to the show regularly or not, but there's a big event in her honor next, I think Monday night. So that's kind of a cool thing. She's turning 60 and they're honoring her with a party for hundreds of people, apparently. So that's kind of cool.
I know. That's what I'm going to miss the most by not being in Chicago
Same. And I
is
have
really
no
that.
time. I have no time in my schedule to allow me to travel to Chicago to spend hundreds of dollars on a place to sleep anyway. So happy birthday, Jennifer. Happy
Happy birthday.
term to everybody that listens that's going to the show. It's a great event, but we won't be around. So enjoy and hopefully you get nice weather in Chicago. And with that, I'm gonna pivot to our guest who is a returning guest, Jess Meshuck from did a show with us last year on pay transparency, and today we're going to talk about there's a new trend. We're going to talk about the trend of naming movements that happen in our industry. We have a new movement every week, and so I love this particular name, which is unbossing. So, Jess, welcome back. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Great to be back. Thanks a lot,
Yeah.
Michael.
So you're glad to have you back. Yeah, like I said, we did a show last year on pay transparency. Since then, I don't know what we've been through, but the big resignation and the big leave, and I know Robin's colleague John Baldino did a show yesterday or earlier this week, anyway, on the big stay. So we're in the middle of big, or other things happening, and we're going to talk about unbossing. So before we jump into what unbossing is, Jess, why don't you tell folks about yourself and who you are and what you're doing these days?
Yeah, of course. So I am a management consultant, mostly in the HR space. And I've spent more than 25 years either in consulting or in-house in various HR roles across every spectrum from compensation to talent management to recruiting to HR leadership. So I'm in a really fortunate position now to be able to be doing consulting with a bunch of companies, a lot of them in entertainment and technology. And so what we're talking about today is definitely something that's on the minds of many of the HR leadership teams and management teams that I've been working with. So it's a really it's an interesting topic to be coming out today.
It is interesting.
Go ahead, Robin.
Oh yeah, no, I would, it's it and I think we'll probably potentially discover this, but when we come up with these catchy terms for things, it's reflective of things we've perhaps talked about before. We just now have a sexy name for them, but
Yeah, we're
the
getting better at branding.
unbossing. We are getting better at branding. And so as we dive into the unbossing conversation, can we take a step back and let's just sort of talk about middle managers. What are middle managers? What is their role? What has been their role? And where have they historically sort of been?
Yeah, good question, Robin. So, middle managers basically means your first and second line managers in the company, right? So these are the people who are in between the executives and the day-to-day employees doing the work, and their role is to translate what the plans and strategies are into actions that the employees implement. And so that's traditionally been the role of middle management, and it's generally been looked at as a way to drive execution, drive quality, drive consistency, and to some extent, when used the wrong way, kind of micromanage the team to make sure that things happen. And so middle managers have not always been the most popular role in companies.
Yeah, it's a tough job, double tough, I guess. I'm emphasizing that. And it's also, at least in my opinion, it's also one of the key linchpin positions in any organization, right? I mean, it's, like to your point, it's that first level of contact day to day. And
That's right.
it's just like the coach on a sports team,
Yeah.
you the owner, the billionaire owner or whatever, those people are remote. The CEO is remote. Who my manager is and how they treat me and the things that they do or don't do for me or take care of problems for me can really make or break a culture, I think, and it can make or break the engagement levels that a company enjoys with their workforce. And here we are once again, kind of going back to let's figure out how to change this or reduce the number of and yada yada. And I it blows my mind a little bit. I don't know where you stand on it, but it definitely makes me go, how can we do that?
I mean, I agree with you, Michael, that your manager is a really critical part of your relationship at a company. I mean, when you look at engagement surveys and you look at studies that have been done over the past, 3 or 4 decades, one of the most important things is your relationship with your boss. That's what gets you to, stay engaged, and is often a reason that you stay at the company if you feel like you have the right development path and someone's really mentoring you. So, the middle management role, while not always the most popular, I would agree with you, can be a very critical job.
Yeah, so what is unbossing? What's that about? What are we experiencing? So let's delve into that, as they would say on AI.
So first of all, like we talked about, this is rebranding a term that has been used and a thing that's happened a lot in companies over many, many years, which is essentially delayering the organization or restructuring the organization, and in particular, eliminating middle management layers. And so the reason this has been, rebranded is you're seeing a lot of companies now, companies like Novartis, Citigroup, Bayer. They're all coming out talking about how their effort to reduce costs, one of the things that they're looking to do is eliminate middle management layers. And now it is getting kind of packaged as unbossing. And the idea here is to increase your overall, span of control. So that means the number of direct reports a leader might have. And it's a good way to, number one, save money. And then number two, in theory, create a flatter organization, which can create some more autonomy for workers, some more freedom for them, less layers between the ideas and the things happening on the ground to the leaders at the top. And so that's what unbossing is. It does look like this is, we're experiencing a number of industries that are doing layoffs these days. And on a percentage basis, it does look like there actually are more middle management affected than have been affected historically. So when there have been layoffs in the past, middle management's generally been about 20% of the total. But now we're seeing where it's all the way up to about a third. So that's what you're seeing here in terms of the data. That's what it's telling us.
How, with the removal of these layers, when you have an organization like a Novartis or some of the other ones that you've mentioned, who I think have been doing this enough where they're probably seeing some results, perhaps. But when you're removing these layers, how is that changing work for everyone else?
It's changing in a number of ways, right? So I'll talk about it in a couple different ways. So one, it's changing work in that it's distributing work deeper into the organization. So what's happening when you have a flatter organization and less management layers is individual employees are getting, more work that they need to drive themselves. So higher level leaders are entrusting them to run projects in a greater degree than they did in the past. So that means more work, and sometimes it means more complex work. And it also requires that people are working cross-functionally, perhaps more than they were in the past. So management sometimes would be that translation layer between, say, finance, HR, and IT on a big project. But now, without a middle management layer, it means the HR generalist is working with the IT, engineer along with the lawyer all together in one project team to try to implement it. And so that is one way it's changing it. So it's requiring people deeper in the organization to own more of the work and work more cross-functionally. It's also changing it in that people are finding that interestingly, with less layers, they're actually interacting a little bit less. So when you think about the percentage of time that you're interacting with people at work, interacting with your boss is actually a big percentage of that time. And so what they're actually seeing is a lot of people are working independently more than they have in the past as a result of this. So you're owning your project, you're driving it, you're doing a lot of it. You're not getting as much day-to-day input or guidance. So you're kind of running it and then bringing it to conclusion a little further than you might have in the past. So that's another way it's changing work that has been noticed from this trend.
Yeah, and it's that need to really, self-manage, I think. And to use a cliche, this is on my mind because I watched Office Space this past weekend for about the 500th time.
Think I've
But
watched about that many too, so that sounds.
right, but all the cliches of the middle manager in there, right? They're really not doing anything, but we wander around with my coffee cup and tell you to turn your TPS reports in.
Right.
And yeah, if I don't have, Lumberg there telling me to turn my TPS reports in, I've gotta do it myself type of thing. So
Yeah.
that self-management
Yeah, I
piece.
mean, it in theory, look, there are some positives to this in theory, right? So the positives could be I have less direct oversight, I'm getting less micromanaged. And so I have more independence and autonomy to do my work. And that's great. I also have a little bit more freedom to be creative and try something that perhaps I might not have been able to in the past. And when I have ideas, there's less layers for me to work through. I can go to somebody at a higher level and say, hey, I think we should change something. Here's what I think we should do. And so when you hear companies like Novartis talking about it, one of the reasons they have said they want to do this is not just, hey, we need to save money. It's they actually think it will create more.
Innovation and
Yeah, exactly. It'll help the organization to operate flatter and therefore innovate and change more quickly. That's one of the, reasons that this has gained some momentum.
It's interesting, and I think part of this may depend, like the positive versus the negative impact or the potential impact may depend on like what kind of business you're in.
Totally.
Or what, what sort of atmosphere the work is being conducted in. And if you're an individual contributor with sort of a professional manager, I think all the things that you just referenced probably are applicable, right? That you feel a little less micromanaged. It's, that's kind of cool. The pressure's off or whatever, maybe. On the other hand, we've talked about this, the effect of the pandemic, on business. Like on every show we do, it seems like, even though it's, theoretically been over for a few years. But where I worked prior to becoming a consultant in the role that I'm in now was a big retail company. And we had, essential employees in stores, because it was a grocer. And so people faced all this stress and pressure. And we jumped up people because we needed to add thousands of new workers, right, in response to the restaurant industry closing down and all that stuff. So what we wound up with was this giant explosion of management mid-level managers, first time first line supervisors who had virtually no training and no time for us to train them. And it created this big log jam within our usually pretty effective culture, where people just weren't, for lack of a better way of saying it, getting this done, right? They'd go to their boss who was undertrained and overwhelmed, and they would listen maybe, but they wouldn't really be able to follow up or didn't know what. So there was like it was there was a
They weren't
huge
that
negative
effective.
impact, you know? And so when you when I heard about this, I think I filtered it through that lens and went like, are these people crazy? And yet, now you're talking. So is it culturally dependent? Is it business dependent? I mean, because
Industry.
yeah, I mean, and it's not a new, to your point earlier, just it's not a new concept. We've seen this happen many times. We expand, we contract,
That's right.
but it is this just, I mean, where's this going, I guess?
Yeah. It's a really good question on where it's going. I would say that, like many of these trends, you may see it catch on for a while, and a lot of companies will start looking at their spans of control and how many middle managers do they have and how effective are they. And this will continue to catch on this year, I think. But in general, I'll just offer my point of view. Like, I think for companies that go through the exercise and they discover, hey, we do have perhaps some middle managers that don't have that many direct reports, and or they're not that effective because of a particular role, or hey, we grew really fast through the pandemic and now we're contracting again and we just don't need as many middle managers. In those cases, yes, there'll probably be a higher percentage of middle managers affected by some restructuring, and that may make sense. I personally don't think this will go to the place where we do a show again a year from now and middle managers are a thing of the past. I just don't see that as the eventual outcome of this, because let's face it, like, managers are a very, very important, critical part of an organization and getting things done. And you need a boss for mentorship, guidance, interaction, connection across departments, championing ideas. And so I don't think we'll ever end up in a place where we just say, we just need the executives and the employees. I mean, it just there's organizations are too complex in order to operate that way. And I think it shortchanges the importance at some level of some middle managers. Now, you may not need as many, right? And you may need to think harder about having maybe fewer and better middle managers that are more empowered themselves. But eliminating middle managers, I don't think we're going that way.
As I think about it, I think one of the lenses to look at it through is just, again, it's not happening overnight, but it is, I think, part of the gradual, transformation of what an organization looks like and how it's laid out and hierarchy. Because you think back to what used to be, right, where there were even more middle managers, right? You picture the org chart of old and all the little boxes and this whole clump of people in the middle. What the heck are they doing? I mean, I think that's probably been lessened to some degree already, but as work evolves and the way, again, this may be industry specific, certainly, but the way people work now, where they are more autonomous and there is this level of independence and there is, here's my job, let me do it. I think newer workers coming in are not going to put up with the bullshit of this hierarchy of let me just have these orders from down, up high, trickle down to me. That there's going to be just this pushback of if I don't work for an organization where I'm trusted to do what they hired me to do, I'm going to rebel against that.
I agree. I think we've already seen some of that. When you look at incoming workers these days, like, what is the thing they prioritize most? If you're asking, like, Gen Z workers as they're coming into the workforce, they want autonomy, independence to work, The ability to express their ideas. So I think all of that is true. And I think as organizations continue to get a little leaner, what will happen is they'll actually have at the individual contributor level more experienced talent in those ranks. And when you're more experienced, you know what you're doing already. You have more tools than you've ever had before with things like AI in order to enhance your own productivity. You probably don't need as much day-to-day guidance as perhaps you did in the past.
Which also gets us then into thinking, fucking back to our previous show we did with you, where we talked compensation things, but it also makes you think about the shift in compensation within organizations and how, if you've got more individual contributors, perhaps, and less managers, that manager position, which historically has been the how do I get a raise while I become a manager? Well, if you're eliminating those positions, you're also eliminating that as a way to grow one's salary and whatnot within an organization. So it's starting to think about, okay, if I've got, do I have enough career paths for people that do not include that management track? And we know a lot of organizations already think that way and do that, but I think that's going to become perhaps more critical for companies to think that way.
I think so. Yeah. And I mean, I have a number of clients that have already implemented or are in the process of implementing, job levels that don't require you to be a manager in order to advance, right? And so increasing number of levels at the individual contributor level that allow you to get paid, the same all the way up as a VP, even if you're an individual contributor. So I think that will become even more prevalent for sure.
I'm gonna veer off the path here for a second. We do this at least once every show, I guess.
At
So
least.
one of the things, like I work in the labor and employee relations space, and one of the biggest stories of the last 2 years plus has been the rise of unions at a company like Starbucks. And I have no insight into all any internal workings at Starbucks, but I have followed that case study very closely from, 30,000 feet through the media, right? And it's pretty obvious that they had a couple of issues. There were more than a couple, but there were a couple of issues directly related to this conversation. And one of those was the fact that they operated like they were heavily driven through data. So this brings us a little bit maybe into your technology practice, but they were heavily driven through data. They were also heavily impacted during the pandemic by the shift from drive up and walk-in business to largely ordering through an app, right? And they also had a centralized employee relations model where you called a call center and got a ticket from the remote areas, right? And then they had general managers that ran several stores and leads who were kind of inside the stores. And they stopped taking, this is a very broad brush statement, but essentially through all those factors, they stopped taking care of their people and resolving their problems to the point where the people got pissed off enough in Buffalo, New York, of all places, to say, screw it, we're going to form a union. And that went viral in a totally a way that nobody in my industry would have ever foreseen. And so and so this brings me back to my whole thing about this whole unbossing idea. They had paired out, they didn't have much leadership in the stores. They had some that the next level of support, the HR people, where the people could go to get their problems solved, was a ticket or a call. And and then during the pandemic, it broke drastically, right? So everything about that went into the toilet for them. And so I guess my takeaway on all this is all the things that you've talked about are important. Organizations need them, but buyer beware in some cases. If you go too far or you make the wrong turn, I mean, and Starbucks is a highly extreme, rare example, but it kind of it can take you there too, right? So how as so what I'm trying to get to with all that is, as companies look at this, what do they need to be thinking about it, kind of on both sides to do this effectively, besides just let's cut some heads, right?
Well, Michael, I'll first react to kind of your Starbucks example and then go into answering the question a little bit more directly. I think, in the Starbucks example, what happened was they sort of lost touch with what it was like to actually work in the coffee shop, right? And what happened was people felt like they were on a never-ending assembly line, and that their leaders did not understand what it was like. They didn't feel adequately compensated as well for what they were doing. And it's one thing if you have like a real issue with your boss or coworker to be able to call a call center, and a lot of companies use a model like that. But you also just saw like an overall erosion of the environment and culture, and that isn't so clear and doesn't come across in probably call center, data that comes through. And so it's an interesting example of where if you get a little bit too disconnected by maybe perhaps delayering too much, you lose an important integral part of your culture and therefore engagement of a lot of your employees. And so I do think it's on the negative side, it's one to be very wary of. So I think you're totally right in calling it out. I would say, look, if you are a company right now, if you're in HR and you're listening to this and your bosses are asking you, hey, should we be thinking about this unbossing trend? What's relevant for us? Here's what I would say. First, I think, look at the data that you've got in your organization. What are the spans of control that you have? Are there areas in which based on that it looks like you have a lot of managers that don't have very many direct reports? Okay, that might be one signal that perhaps this is something for you to look at. Second, what does your engagement data tell you? Right? Do you have places where people are feeling particularly micromanaged or not empowered? What departments are those? And dig into the reasons why. So start with data to really understand what's driving where these changes may make sense for you. And then the other piece I would say is if your company's made the decision that you want to make these changes, go through them very planfully, thinking about how it will work in practice. Okay, so if you need to do this, start thinking about what is the actual structure for a organization post change. Are managers going to now suddenly have 20 direct reports? And is that going to be actually doable for them? Does that team that is going to have maybe that's going to be delayered, do they have a lot of is there a lot of guidance that those employees need, or is this a pretty experienced team that can manage this pretty directly? I think you kind of need to go through that thought process and analysis in order to figure out what the approach is.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
On the personal side, my husband is the epitome of a middle manager at his organization. And he has 18 direct reports. And
That
this
sounds like a lot.
tech, it is a lot, and it's tech. And so he's involved with a lot of their customer issues as well. But he does one-on-ones with all of his 18 people. I mean, like every he's got like a bi-weekly rotation. He does one-on-ones with them, and he's always a lot of it is the coaching and the problem solving, and they have an issue that he needs to hop on with them to help solve or whatever. So he's very involved in that, and they're all remote. They're all over. He's got them all over the place,
Yeah.
but it's very high touch, very high touch. And yeah, if they, they certainly, I couldn't see them cutting out levels where he is.
Right. That sounds like a more challenging place to cut. But if they did and
Yeah.
suddenly had 30 direct reports, I'm guessing the
Yeah.
job would
Yeah.
be very challenging, right?
Yeah,
And
exactly.
18 already
Yeah.
sounds pretty hard. And
Yeah.
so I do think like this is where an HR person can add some value, right? Because
Right.
look, companies are struggling right now to grow because interest rates are high.
Yep.
Businesses are not expanding naturally, so companies are trying to find ways to grow by cutting costs. It's sort of a natural thing, and that's why that's the higher level meta of why this embossing thing is happening in the first place. But where an HR person can help is digging in to say, yes, I think that we could look at delayering organization. We could look at eliminating some middle management layers, but let's look practically at what the impact of that is and where it makes sense and where it doesn't. And where it may help productivity, but where it may actually hurt the culture or create engagement issues. That is, I think, is a very important role for HR to play.
We are at our time, and as it was last time, it was an interesting discussion. So thanks for being a guest on Drive Through today, and we appreciate having you back. Always great to have a boomerang guest.
One.
In taking us out, why don't you share where folks can reach out to you on the internet or LinkedIn or whatever is appropriate, and then we'll go ahead and end the show.
If people want to reach out, always happy to engage and discuss. You can reach me on LinkedIn and find me there, Jesse Meschuk, or jessemeschuk.com, or you can also connect through ExEquity, which is right. So great to be with you guys, and thanks again, Michael and Robin, for having me.
Thanks. And
Absolutely.
we'll put those links in the show notes as well so that people will be able to find them. So thanks a lot for doing it. We'll see you down the road again sometime, Jesse, and have a great weekend, upcoming weekend.
Thanks, and you too.